everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast, and it's that time of the week again. It's not quite that time of the week. We normally do this on a Thursday, but we've got a midweek game this week, and of course, it's a massive one for both teams, both sides of the park. It's the Merseyside derby. Delighted to be joined by a good friend of mine, Stephen Warnock. Steve, how are you doing, mate?
Very good, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. I can't complain. Well, not yet. I'm sure I'll be complaining. A lot of the ones doing the complaining at the moment, which... Before we get on to the derby, obviously, in your work you do as a pundit and the stuff you do at Sky, this will have been covered a lot yesterday, but just give us your opinion on the bizarre incidents, I guess, that went on in the Everton Forest game.
I think there was, three penalty incidents, all including Ashley Young or involving him. I think the first one, was contact. But I think it'd have been very harsh to give a penalty, but you could see if it was given, you could understand why he's kicked through the back of him. Perhaps doesn't really see him coming. The second one, I don't think's a penalty because of... It drives me mad, this natural body position and this silhouette.
You've been in that position, haven't you? And I think a lot of the ex-pros who've come out and spoke about it, Jag spoke about it on Match of the Day as well, in terms of as you're jumping and stuff. How is it not natural to have your arms for balance, you know what I mean? And it's not like he's going like that, is it? And he's trying to...
No. So I just didn't understand that one. The third one, I think, is a pen. I think he's got away with that one. Bad thing about it all is the referee sort of gesturing like the ball, saying he's got the ball, and then you've got VAR to back him up and whatever. And the thing is, my big thing is VAR was brought in for these big decisions. And I don't want to see games re-refereed. I don't want that at all. But I think if there is something clear and obvious, and this is the other thing as well. Clear and obvious needs to go. It's just got to be right and wrong. And if you've got it wrong, you've got it wrong, and correct it. And that's what you've got to do. Don't go looking for things. But if it's a big incident, then clear it up. I think Forrest are wrong in what they've done with the statement. I understand they're frustrated, and I've got to say, like, they've lost so many points this season from bad decisions that have gone against them. It's not to say that Everton wouldn't won the game anyway, and the game might have changed, but it gives them a better chance, doesn't it? And the ironic thing about calling him a Luton fan is a draw would have been a better result. So why wouldn't he have given the pen?
I know. It
makes no sense.
Yeah. It was unsavoury. I thought the comments at the end were unsavoury and not befitting of a club of that size and, you know, history, etc. I'll shift a second there. I thought the comments were unsavoury and not befitting of Forest, of club that size and stature. But just briefly, again, and I don't want to take up all your time on referees because you've done this to death probably, but the bit that I get from, and this is out of sympathy for referees, that almost, VAR almost encourages referees not to make a decision or not to make a decision of giving something, if you know what I mean. Because in the back of their minds, they're thinking, well, if I get it wrong, I'll be corrected. I'd rather not give a penalty and be told to have another look at it than give a penalty and have to take it away. It's like, it's human nature, isn't it, almost, to go, well, I'll just stay on the side of the caution and wait for someone to give me the heads up if I've got it wrong.
Yeah, and they're just not refereeing the games, are they now? They're allowing it to... I see VAR as a safety blanket for them. But the big thing is that, as we saw with that final decision anyway in the game, the last penalty appeal, is if you're working as a team of referees and your officials, then help your mate out. If he's missed something, then say to him, be honest with him and say, listen, you've missed one there. That's concerning to me, is that they're getting things wrong. I'd love to see VAR scrapped and for a trial period to see how the reaction is when it goes and see what people actually think about it, to go, even if it's for like a month or 2 months, and see what the reaction is to it. But it keeps me in a job, so I can't complain.
too busy. I mean, yeah, no, it's a good shout. And I guess to kind of finish on that one, the Championship clubs have probably got quite a good experience of it, because some of them have reached some of the latter rounds of the cup competitions, and they've been in games where they've had VAR and haven't had VAR. Yeah. So they'll probably have a good, probably an interesting interpretation of how they feel it's changed and changed the way they've approached the game as players. Because it changes for the players, doesn't it? They behave in a different way. They don't approach situations in the same way. I think one good thing I think it's brought to us, and it's a small consolation, I guess, is you don't see the players' hands on the referee as much anymore. It's kind of, they have a little bit of a, they'll put their hands up and then they'll kind of get on with it a little bit and think, well, someone's going to make that decision and we'll just get on with the game in the meantime.
Yeah.
But, not enough.
Small is thing, isn't it? It's not enough.
It's a small thing. But anyway, moving on to this Wednesday, and hopefully, regardless of the outcome, the game isn't dominated by this type of thing. It's been a difficult time for Liverpool, I guess. You know, the news of Klopp leaving a few months ago initially didn't really change anything in terms of the results. It seemed to, if anything, galvanise them further and push them on. From the outside looking in, and it's probably not quite the outside looking in, I'm looking at it with tinted glasses as well as an Evertonian, it seems as though to me like the whole Klopp thing is starting to take its toll a bit psychologically or mentally on the players. What's been your feeling on the recent form and I guess the impact of the Klopp situation on the season?
No, I think the big thing for me is that they've just hit a point where they survived for probably a month and overachieved when they had big players out. And I'm talking Jota, Alisson, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Curtis Jones was out for a long period of time as well. There's probably a few more in there. Thiago's not played all season. There was a point where Liverpool were missing a lot of players. Salah was missing for a long period of time as well through the AFCON and then picking up an injury. And they overachieve with the kids. And I think there's just a sense of, like, invincibility at one point. But it always catches up on you. And what we're seeing now is we've seen that over the last couple of weeks where they obviously lose the game against Crystal Palace, where Palace were superb, to be fair to them. But Liverpool looked drained and it looked like it had almost gone a game too far. And then I was at both the Atalanta games, and first half of the second game away at Atalanta, they actually played well. But second half, they just lost belief in what they were doing, whether it was just a couple of chances that they'd missed and they just thought it was beyond them. But what I would say is the game against Fulham at the weekend, you see Trent Alexander-Arnold back in the team and Liverpool are a different team. He can just pick passes that no other players can pick. I just liken him to De Bruyne for City. He changes the dynamic of Manchester City, and Trent does the same for Liverpool. Some of the runs that the players can now make again, knowing that he's on the ball, it's brilliant to watch. I mean, not from an Everton point of view, because you're going to have to defend against that and understand how hard it is to defend against him. But the guys, I mean, the lad's just so gifted with his passing ability. But also as well, I think Alisson playing a couple more games is quicker, sharper, more alert in what he's doing. I think the big interesting point, and I don't know whether it's one of your questions, will be Salah.
Whether he
starts. I think if you actually look at Salah's form in recent seasons, since he's come back from AFCON, since his final 10 games of the season, the year in which last year was his most productive when Liverpool were at the worst and he was the go-to guy. But in the years that they've won the Premier League, the Champions League, and had the final 10-game running, his form's not been fantastic. And whether that's just because of the amount of games he plays and the pressure he's under. But I thought Liverpool looked a better forward line when it was Gakpo, Diaz and Jota.
It's interesting you say that. I've been criticised by my, you know, Liverpool mates who support Liverpool for saying that on occasions. And it's just that degree of not selfishness necessarily from Salah's part. It's almost the other players at times feeling inferior somewhat to him, and they've got to make that pass and he's got to get the ball, and they've almost got to cater to the way he plays. You know, the three you've just mentioned there, they're all young, they're all energetic, they all bring something slightly different to the party. I think when you've got a player like Salah, and I wouldn't quite liken it to Ronaldo being at United, because he was well over the hill. I don't think Salah's quite there yet. But I think there's, for me, that there feels like a similar tendency to, okay, Salah's playing, so this is the way we play now. When these three are playing, we just play. I don't know.
I don't think he's anywhere near over the hill. I just think it's just a fatigue at this stage of the season. I think it's just because of what he brings, and Salah can play poor, but he can change a game within a second or 2 seconds just because of his ability to beat someone in a 1v1, or his running behind, or just being in the right place, that knack of knowing where to be. But when you're playing, when you're relied on so much throughout the season, he's the one mainstay for the first sort of 25, 30 games of the season. And then it comes to a point where you're thinking, well, you should have rested him, should have rotated him a little bit more. But he's being brave. Well, I say being brave, he's just been a good manager in the last few games, where if he's not played well, he's took him off.
Yeah, definitely. So again, we're getting to this more specifically, but in your opinion, does he play or not play on Wednesday? Would you play him?
That's tough, isn't it? There's an element where you'd say I'd play him for the fear of, because he strikes fear into defenders, because you know you can't switch off. But I just think for that continuity up front and for freshness, I'd say I'd rather have him on the bench and bring him off the bench.
I mean, either way, it's equally as frightening for us. I get the notion of playing him just on the basis that he'll intimidate defenders and he'll maybe attract one or two more bodies than a Gakpo would, and create space for others. And that's where, in particular, Trent can cause even more problems when he's got space to work with. But yeah, interesting one, certainly. Just before we come on to maybe who you would pick on Wednesday, you know, across the field, where do you rate Liverpool's chances now of winning the league? Is it a matter of let's hope City slip up, or do you still think there's some twists in there anyway?
I still think there's a couple of twists. I think it depends how City recover in these last few days, isn't it? From the 120 minutes against Real Madrid, and then tough game again at the weekend against Chelsea. I'm actually going to the Brighton game on Thursday night. I'm covering that. And then I'm actually watching them again at the weekend on Sunday. I'm covering that game as well. And I just think they've got four away games, which is tough within the Premier League. You've got teams who are going to be fighting. They play Brighton away, as I say. Depends what Brighton turn up and how they play. We all thought that they'd give Arsenal a tough game, and Arsenal dominated them and overpowered them. But we have seen them cause problems. And then Nottingham Forest away from home, you'd say, well, that should be an easy win for them. But Forest away is not an easy game. And then, obviously, off the back of Everton beating them, they're going to be scrapping for their lives, and there's going to be a lot of sort of focus on them as well. It's going to be a big ask for Liverpool, but you ask any Liverpool fan at the start of the season, would they have taken this with five games to go, that they'd still be in the hunt? They're a point off the top, or joint top and goal difference and things like that, or if City win, they're a couple of points behind. You'd have absolutely snapped their hands off for it. So it's just one of those things. They need a little bit of luck, don't they? They need someone to do them a favour.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Coming back to the game then, you've obviously mentioned the conundrum around Salah. There was a few players that were left out over the weekend. My question would be, do you think that was a case of resting them players, or was it a case, as some people were suggesting, of Klopp becoming a little bit tired of some of them underperforming the last few games and just giving players an opportunity? And the last part of it, do them big players all come back, the McAllisters, the Salahs, the Nunes, or do you stick with the players who've done a solid job on Sunday?
I think there'll be a mixture. I think I don't think he's frustrated with them. I think he's listen. You can't get frustrated with people who've took you to the top of the league or in and around the top of the league, can
you? Yeah, I'm just talking about the Fulham game, the first leg against Atalanta.
That's fatigue as well, though. Yeah, but that all comes down to fatigue as well, and we spoke about that by how many games the players are playing. I mean, if you were to play Liverpool versus Atalanta in October, Liverpool wiped the floor with them. There's nothing that I can see differently to that. A fully energetic Liverpool team, everyone on the game, both sets of players, Liverpool win it.
You put the missed chances down to fatigue as well, then?
I'd put that down to pressure of where they're at the moment. I'd say a lot of the missed chances as well have come to Nunes. I'd say a lot of them have fell to his in front of goal. He's missed some gilt-edged chances. I don't think he's a natural goal scorer. I think he plays off instinct and things like that. I don't think that's the strength of his game. But even the Curtis Jones one, when he goes through against Crystal Palace, he knows what's on the line as he's going through.
Yeah.
And that's pressure. That's something, if that's in October and you're going through, I think he calmly slots that, because there was a sense of anxiousness around the ground because it was almost like this is slipping away, the title. Well, the title in October is not there. So it's a different feeling amongst the players and the mindsets of the players. So, I think McAllister will come back in. I think he'll want him back in that midfield to control the pace of the game as well. I think he just needed the rest. If I'm being honest,
McAllister's been outstanding. Yeah,
I think he'll go with Endo again. It's whether he goes with Szoboszlai or whether he goes with Elliot or Jones, isn't it? That's the other tough one. I think he probably goes with Curtis Jones alongside Endo and McAllister.
I guess Curtis Jones being a scout, and not that Klopp looks at these games as maybe as much as Everton do in terms of having that local feel, but I think it does help on a derby day as well. Just on the game itself, then, how is the game won for you, for Liverpool? What do they need to do? I guess that's an easy question, because you would say they turn up, they win, which is probably fair. But what in particular do they need to do well on Wednesday against Everton?
Be patient. I think the hardest thing to do is to try and go out and win the game in the first 5 or 10 minutes and leave yourselves a little bit vulnerable to the counter-attack. I think the one thing they know about Everton is that apart from Calvert-Lewin, there's not a great deal of pace within the team. So they'll be able to compact the pitch even more and make it even smaller when they're defending the pitch. But I think it's just about taking your opportunities when they come. They're going to have to be more clinical than they've ever been, because I think chances will be very few and far between. I can see Everton being camped on the edge of the box for pretty much most of the game. And I don't think it would have necessarily been that way had they not seen the Liverpool second half against Fulham. I just thought they got the swagger back, and the way that they play and the way that they move the ball quickly in that game. So I just think the speed in which they'll move the ball, I think it'll come down to something individual, whether it's like Luis Diaz beating someone or creating something individually, or whether it's a Trent pass or something like that, that'll unlock the defence, and then that changes the game plan for Everton, and then Everton will have to come out. It'll leave a few gaps, and that'll play into Liverpool's hands. But it'll be interesting if Everton get a goal though, and they get the first goal, because then it suits their game plan and what they want to do.
Well, you've just almost answered the question then with what you said at the start and what you said at the end. But how, if at all, can Everton get a win from this game? What do they need to do to upset Liverpool? Is it just get a goal and you know, that, as you say, then changes the anxiety, it changes the game plan, it puts a little bit more urgency into Liverpool play?
I think Everton have got to play the percentage game. And what I mean by that is that Trent will vacate his position because he likes to drift inside and it's what Klopp wants him to do. Andy Robbo will probably go forward a lot more as well. And that leaves space down the sides. And people will say, well, they haven't got pace, Everton. Well, they have in Calvert-Lewin. But Calvert-Lewin's just got to play a different game. So every time that Everton get the ball, they've got to hit a diagonal into that space and then try and win a throw-in or a corner, whatever you can win. And that's your percentages where you're trying to get yourself up the pitch and play from there. You've got to play for throw-ins and corners and hope that you can pinch something off a set piece. Because, let's be honest, I don't think they're going to cut through them. They're not going to find ways through Liverpool individually. And I think they've got to play that type of game. Make it ugly and horrible. The big thing you've got to do against Liverpool is you've got to, and it's what Atalanta done so, so well, you've got to disrupt the rhythm and you've got to make clever fouls all the time and slow them down, frustrate them. Because if let them get in the rhythm, that's curtains and that's the hardest thing. So Everton will fancy themselves to defend set pieces against Liverpool. They'll think they've got enough height within the team to be able to do that. And then it's just about being organised, isn't it, for Everton, as much as they can. The communication across the pitch is going to have to be at its absolute maximum. The thing that Everton are going to have to do is they're going to have to hope that they can get 8 or 9 out of 10 performances.
Yeah.
And I think that would be the hope of getting to come out of the game. Yeah. So... yeah, it's just, I think the thing is like everyone will go, well, you're being very negative towards Everton there. They haven't created much all season in the way that they play. I've been a little bit critical of Sean Dyche of late because I think you've got to change something at some point to win games. And they do look very, very much of a defensive team and very, like, they're organised to a certain point, but the players aren't enjoying playing in it. They're finding it difficult week in, week out and going, there's no outlet. When you're constantly sat on the edge of your box defending, even against teams who aren't as good as Liverpool, then you're a bit, you get frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, as you know well, football or other time, if you make it simple, there's a lot, there's, you know, 10 1v1 battles out there, not including the goalies. I look through the team, there's not many of them 1v1 battles that I've fancy Everton to get the better of if you turn up. The exception for that for me though is actually the midfield. I don't see this, and a lot of people have said this season, I don't see this as being the strongest Liverpool. That's always been the last 10 years. You looked at your midfield 3 or 4 and you think, how would Everton win that battle? I look at them and there's a mix of, you know, inexperience. There's players who are maybe not quite midfielders, Curtis Jones being one of them. He isn't a central midfielder. He's not the player, despite the fact he can be tenacious, that'll turn up for a battle and he's gonna win those individual 1v1s. If we have, you know, Onana, if he turns up, you never really know if he's going to turn up, but I think he'll relish that on Wednesday. The fact the fans are there and the atmosphere. I think if there's going to be a game that he might turn up, this would be it. Doucouré, I think you know what you're going to get from Doucouré in terms of work rate and endeavour. And again, Garner Guy is a player who's played in the big occasions and he can be that player who can disrupt the midfield. I look at those three against maybe a I don't know, a McAllister who's I think the exception. He is very good for you guys, and you know the other two, Endo and maybe Gravenberch or Curtis Jones. And I think, you know what, I think that is an area of the pitch that we could potentially get the upper hand.
Yeah, possibly. I think the big thing is the hard bit is Liverpool struggle when the midfielders get beyond their midfield. And you can get, once you get beyond them, they can't get back in because they haven't got that athleticism, especially Endo and McAllister. Curtis Jones can a little bit, well, more so than them two. But when you look at that, it's like, if you're not dominate or if you've not got the ball, how do you get beyond them? How are you brave enough to get beyond them? McAllister will, I mean, he's so clever in the way he plays with the ball, you can't get near him. But if you're sat deep, it's when do you go and press? How do you go and press them players in midfield? Yeah. I understand what you mean because I've spoke about this a few times now. Is like Liverpool's team that won the Champions League and the league had arguably the hardest working midfield in football, in world football at the time. You look at like Henderson, Milner, Wijnaldum and Fabinho. You'd go up against them and think, how are we going to outrun these? How are we going to outbattle them? Even the organisation, like I think you probably heard a lot of it when COVID was here and we had the behind closed doors games or behind when there was no fans, and it was pretty much all you could hear was Henderson and Milner every single game organising the team. And I think they've lost an element of that now, and that's why they probably had that little bit of a drop-off as late, because them standards in midfield, that organisation isn't quite there. And that comes with experience, obviously. But it'll be a fascinating battle, won't it? It'll just be very tough for Everton to get beyond that midfield if they're not getting the ball.
No, I don't disagree. So anyway, I won't keep you too much longer. Stay just the magic bit of prediction.
I'm gonna go 3-1 Liverpool.
I do actually fancy goals, and I agree with everything you said in terms of the way that Everton can potentially get at Liverpool. And I still think with Alisson not quite fully fit, I think if he's fully fit and he's maybe got 4, 5, 6 games under his belt, I think the proposition of us trying to pepper you from set plays is diminished somewhat. I think he can dominate that box, Alisson, when he's on his game. But
yeah,
I think we might still be able to upset that a little bit. I fancy us to get a couple, but I don't fancy us to outscore you, so I'm going to go with 2-2.
Oh, right. Interesting.
You have actually down the years at Goodison. There's been a few 2-2s in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So I'd be delighted. I think as most Evertonians would be with a draw. But yeah, here's to hoping.
Yeah,
let's
hope that kills you, mate.
The story of our lives and the story of this podcast, probably, but... Yeah. Anyway, Steve, really appreciate your time, mate. And I'd say best of luck. I definitely don't mean it. Best of luck.
No, I know you don't.
I normally say to the opposition, best of luck after this game, but I don't even mean best of luck. You just don't need to look.
Brilliant.
Yeah, nice one.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care, mate. See you soon.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.